Well, before we open it up to the audience Q&A, I guess I'll start with Drew, and we can go down whoever wants to chat. But I guess in your opinion, is bluegrass more of a sound or an attitude with where we're at right now?
It's a floor wax and a dessert topping. It's all those things. It's definitely, it's an attitude, you know. It's an art form all unto itself, you know, and it is something that when you learn bluegrass instruments, you learn the way that instrument is played within the art form, or at least you try to. I've been trying to for a long time. And, you know, you listen to the great players, and you listen to the way Bill Monroe played, and, you know, players down the line. And each instrument is played, it has a language, and you learn that language. Like Pete was saying, I don't know if I'm answering the question at all, but Pete was saying, like, the campground is where that happens. And it is the only kind of music that really... The jamming late night is a huge part of what this music is about. It's so much of it doesn't just happen on the stage. We barely even went to the festivals back in the day. Like, yeah, who's playing? I don't know. And we'd be playing around the campfire. We didn't care. You know, we'd go see those shows that really meant the most to us, but mainly we were in the campground playing together. And to me, that really is the crux of it. Like, I'm glad that Pete brought that up, because that's how I learned. I mean, I learned standing around a fire until dawn with different players.
Well.
Yes, that's a whole nother story. But
what about anyway. You, Kyle? Is what do you think? Is bluegrass more of an attitude or a sound or both?
I think attitude for sure, man. I would say, because that's the infectious part. You know, that's like what Drew's talking about and what Pete's talking about. Like you get the bug, you know, and the sound is appealing. I mean, the sound. Is a whole bunch of sort of, it's an amalgamation of other sounds that sort of existed and got put together, and we chose this sort of rhythm that we're going to play them at, or this sort of subset of time feels and stuff. But the attitude is what you love, I think. I think that's what everyone loves about it. What's that gives you that infectious, I got to get more of that feeling, you know?
100%. Yeah. What about you, Jim?
What they said. Hey, and real quick, I want to, you know, talking about ear training, about 15 years ago, I had a gig at the Station Inn with my bluegrass band at the time. And so the banjo player couldn't make the gig the next day for some reason. So John Frazier, who was playing mandolin with me, said, oh, I know this guy, Kyle Tuttle, I'll call him. I said, man, that's going to be about 35 songs at least. I don't know how he's going to be able to do it. And so I talked to Kyle, and he said, I got all the files of the songs. I've got an 8-hour drive. I've got a lot to listen to. So he came to the gig and just totally nailed everything. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Everything was in G, right?
Yeah. But I guess it is, you know, I think it is a sound, definitely, and that kind of maybe leads to the attitude of just like, yeah, we're going to go out there and, yeah, you know, there's an excitement, you know, because of what's you're going to hear and come through you, which you kind of, you know, like talking about these jams, it is some of my favorite times have been these late night festival experiences where you are just so free. You know, you're not worried about anything, you know, any pressures of the show necessarily. And so you're just it's just pure music.
What about you, Pete?
Well, I agree about attitude is a big part of it. But when you think about it, bluegrass depends on a certain formula of instruments, and that is what makes it different from other kinds of music, although it's still important about the material, which can be from any place. Great singers can be from any tradition, but it's banjo, mandolin, guitar, fiddle, and bass. That was true in 1945. It was true for 1973 with Olden in the Way. It's true for the Punch Brothers now. five instruments that happen to fit together really well, and that's a sound. And if you just bring out a fiddle into a rock group, somebody will say, oh, bluegrass. Mm-mm, no. Or banjo shows up, like Taylor Swift has a six-string banjo that you play like a guitar, but there she is holding a banjo. How nice. But that's not bluegrass. And Bill was real fussy about the dobro. When I interviewed him, he said, don't need no dobro in bluegrass, because his rivals, Flat and Scruggs, had a dobro. But then it turns out Barbara Mandrell shows up on his album with a dobro. She's cuter than Flat and Scruggs, of course. And I asked him about that, and he said, well, if it's played in a bluegrass manner. And I even asked him also at a different time about your first band had a jug and a tenor banjo. And I said, can a jug be a bluegrass instrument? Because anything he did, he thought was bluegrass.
Didn't he have an accordion, too?
He had an accordion, too. And an electric guitar on a couple of cuts, et cetera. But I said, is a jug, if somebody has a jug and a, he says, if it's played in a bluegrass manner and it can't override.
It's like the Midas touch of Monroe. If he touched it, it was bluegrass, right? It's
pretty much. And the attitude thing is huge respect for tradition. And I'm from an educated background in New York City, but I got a huge respect for tradition by being around it and hearing my heroes talking about it, and a lot of them never made it to high school. But they had this other kind of wisdom that I really wanted a part of. And then I got lucky because I got my foot in the door because I could explain some of this stuff and sell books that were about it and things like that. And in the meantime, I interviewed about anybody you can imagine in bluegrass for publication and learned a huge amount from them, and they were always so nice to me. It was great. So that's a community that is precious. So one last point, when we were in IBMA, we hired a marketing firm to help us market bluegrass. This is around the year 1995. And we got a professional marketing. They took the $20,000 and came back with three words: alternative, natural, and community. They said, if you work on those three words, then that's your audience. That's what defines what's special about your audience. And that has really stuck with me. Natural means, you know, bicyclers, and people who work in the yard and build things around their house, those are bluegrass kind of people. And, you know, alternative people who are not necessarily taken with just fads. They have to really like it. And, of course, community, that's what we're doing right here.
Ronnie?
Wow. Don't follow Pete. Well, I mean, for me, you know, I was raised in this music, and I was born in 67. My dad started a band in 66, and it's all I've ever known. And as far as, you know, attitude or sound, I don't know how to really answer that, because I've played it all my life and played in my dad's band now over 40-some years. And you know, with him, he's my, you know, he's the captain of the ship all the time. And he has taught me that he doesn't like, and he thinks people are the same way. They don't really care to hear music in the same chord, same key, the same tempo. So he always shifted that. If he does a sad song, a slow song, that you can tell it hits people, and then right after that he'll do something fast. Now to me that's kind of attitude, but it's also the sound. So I don't know how to say anything else about it, but that's just that, and I feel it too, so I think the people feel that.
Yeah, you know, I agree wholeheartedly.